Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the historic sounds of radio's bygone days. The golden age of radio rides again.
Oh, we started 5 seconds early tonight. I hope everyone's tuned in. This is Max Schmid, your host for the Golden Age of Radio. And what a program we have for you today. Another great episode of Gunsmoke. People were praising last week's show, even on Radio Unnameable with Bob Pass on Thursday overnight. So we have the next episode in the series. Our main event, you know, Jerry Heindiges. You know, Jerry, he's the biggest collector maybe in this country of radio transcription discs. He has a program much like this one that appears actually at 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings, the same slot where my Saturday program appears on Yesterday USA. So we're kind of stable mates in that regard on the internet. And Jerry has a massive collection of original transcription discs, and he likes to post scans of the labels of the discs that he's working on. And his most recent, last Friday maybe, he posted up. And there, you know, all these Armed Forces radio discs and NBC discs and orthoacoustic and this and that. And there's one with no label, just white grease paint on it, saying, "Quiet, please, Fort Ticonderoga," or some such thing. And I said, "That's a missing episode of Quiet, Please." And I begged Jerry to share it with the public, and he did within days. And we're going to bring it to you tonight. A lost episode of Quiet, Please by Willis Cooper with Mr. Chappell. So that will be coming up in a second up tonight. We're also going to hear an episode of The Fat Man. Not an American one, because, you know, maybe Jerry could turn up a new American Fat Man. There are very few. The show was on a number of years, and only about 5 or 6 of the original J. Scott Smart shows survived. But there's a bunch from Australia. And we're going to hear one of those tonight. And we'll round it out with a program from 70 years ago, this very day in history, the 9th episode of Ann Southern as Maisie Revere in The Adventures of Maisie. So that's our lineup. We're going to begin with the 28th, I believe, episode of Gunsmoke. Let me pull up. There we go. Overland Express is our title, from October 31st in 1952. Matt and Chester are escorting a killer back to Dodge, but there's action on the stagecoach. So here we go with a script by John Meston, episode number 28 of Gunsmoke, to get us rolling here tonight on the Golden Age of Radio here on WBAI New York.
City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, the transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America, the story of a man who moved with it, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
A stranger named Joe Beaudry killed a man in Dodge and then got on his horse and rode 90 miles northwest. He made it across the Smoky Hill River before his horse played out and fell behind a small knoll. Beaudry put a knife in him and settled down to wait. Half hour later, he shot my horse out from under me and crippled Chester's with a slug in the shoulder. then he gave up. He just threw down his guns and walked toward us across the prairie, his hands in the air.
You think it's a trick, Mr. Dillon?
I don't know, Chester, but if he makes a move, I'll kill him.
Yes, sir.
That's far enough, Beaudry. Now turn around.
I ain't armed, Marshal.
No. You know, I'm curious, Beaudry. Why didn't you shoot it out?
I don't want to kill anybody, Marshal.
You killed a man in Dodge.
He went for his gun. I had to.
Some of the witnesses say he didn't.
Oh, sure. Friends of his. I heard him. That's why I lit out.
Man looks guilty when he runs. You should have stayed and faced it.
Now, what
there.
Kind of shake could I get in a strange town, Marshal? Everybody be against me.
The law protects you if you're innocent. You'll have to stand trial now anyway.
Well, maybe I made a mistake, but I'm still alive.
Yeah, and a long way from Dodge.
Say, by gracious, that's right. How are we going to get back, Mr. Dillon?
Well, we crossed the Overland Express route about 5 miles back. We'll just walk to the road and wait for a stage, I guess.
Yeah, but the stage don't go up to Dodge from here, sir.
Well, we'll take it into Fort Donner. Maybe the Army will lend us some horses there and we can turn them back at Fort Dodge.
Marshal.
Yeah.
Well, I know you don't owe me no favors, Marshal, but I never been arrested before. I'd be kind of ashamed in front of everybody on stage.
Well, that's tough, Beaudry. What do you expect me to do?
Only a little thing, Marshal, won't make any difference to you. Just don't let them know that you're taking me in, is all.
All right, Beaudry, I guess it doesn't matter.
Thanks.
I'm not wearing a badge anyway. But you make one move and I'll hogtie you and you'll ride on the roof. Or you'll be dead.
Well, it's a deal, Marshal.
You'll get a fair trial, Beaudry. If you're innocent, you'll go free.
Well, if it is a fair trial, I'm going back to California. I don't know why I ever left it.
You come from California?
Yeah. Hey, Marshal, look, is it all right if I lug my saddle back with me?
Yeah, sure, we're not leaving ours. Chester, I'll go with Beaudry and get his guns.
Yes, Mr. Dillon. I sure do wish you'd stop closer to the stage road, though, Beaudry. 5 miles is a long way packing a saddle.
Go take care of your horse, Chester. Let's get out of here.
Yes, sir. It's a doggone shame, though. That was a mighty good horse.
Come on, Beaudry.
I sure hope the stage hasn't gone by already, Mr. Dillon.
Why don't you get off your back and look down the road, Chester?
Well, I declare. Looky yonder, it's a-coming. And it's painted bright red, too, Mr. Dillon.
Hey, what if they don't stop for us, Marshal?
Road agents don't usually carry their saddles. The driver will notice that if he's awake.
Driving a 6-horse hitch ought to keep him awake.
Yeah, but not sober.
That's his shotgun the messenger's holding.
He doesn't need it. We want a ride, that's all.
Where's your horses?
Marshal, please, you remember what you said.
We lost them.
You don't look like greenhorns to me.
It can happen to anyone.
That's cool. The one in the middle ain't even armed. Pick him up, Hank.
All right, Berryman, it's your treasure box. How far are you going?
Fort Donner.
It's about 60 miles to Fort Donner. You're crowding us. That'll be 15 cents a mile.
15 cents. How much is that, Mr. Dillon?
About $9, Chester.
$9 apiece, that is, and payable right here.
All right. It's high, but I can't argue with you now. Here you are. 20, 5, 6, 7.
All right, mister. Get in. I don't know how the passengers are going to like this, though.
You got room for a couple more in here?
Anybody can't keep his horse or to walk home.
There's room for two, maybe, but not three.
Oh?
Take a look for yourself, mister.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Chester?
Oh, no, sir, I can't...
I don't want Beaudry on top. You'll have to get up there, Chester.
Well, I guess you're right, sir.
But I think you fellas ought to charge us less if I can't ride inside.
The Overland stage guarantees a ride, mister. Comfort's a passenger's problem.
Get in, Beaudry.
Yeah.
Now get fixed somehow. You've held us up long enough.
Give me a hand.
You don't look like a judge, mister.
I'm not a judge.
Well, you must be important somehow. We order these men around, and that fellow on top there calls you sir.
Dillon?
Well, let's just say that I'm sort of the boss of this outfit, mister.
What'd you say your name was?
I didn't say. It happens to be Dillon.
Well, I'm Zimmer. Old man here called himself Gant.
My name is Gant, and I ain't ashamed of it. And I don't give a long hoot what any of you call yourselves.
Gant's kind of crusty, but he's sober. That's more than I can say for the other two here. They only wake up long enough to pull on that jug they got and get drunk enough to go back to sleep.
Well, that's not a bad way to travel if your stomach can stand it, I guess.
No, I ain't do it myself if I was younger.
What business you in, Dillon?
You ask too many questions, Jimmy. You ain't got no manners.
Nobody's asking you, old man.
Good, good. Then I don't have to listen to your gobbling.
Now, listen here, Gant. Any more out of you, and I'll tear you apart.
You can't spook me. I'm too old. 85, mister. Wouldn't you believe it?
No, sir, I wouldn't. That's mighty old. You sure don't look it.
I knew Meriwether Lewis, mister. Met him in St. Louis when he and Clark come back from the Pacific.
Now who's doing all the talking?
Leave him be, Zimmer. There's no harm in passing the time.
Well, look, mister. You may be the boss of these other fellas, but you don't run me.
Nobody's trying to run you. Just take it easy.
Don't pay him no mind, Dillon. He's just nervous about something.
What are you driving at, old man?
We'll be in Monument Station about an hour, Dillon. Spend the night there. Hope the chow's improved. Last time I was there, all I had was fat pork. One passenger says, I never eat fat pork. So the cook told him, well, then just help yourself to the mustard.
Monument Station was a long, low hut made of sun-dried, mud-colored bricks, with a flat roof, thatched and then sodded. The one building served as an eating room in the daytime and a bunkhouse at night. There wasn't much air inside, and after dinner, fat pork and mustard, Chester, Beaudry, and I went out to the corral for a smoke.
Whew. My gracious alive, I hate to think of sleeping in there. All those men, why, a fella could suffocate. And I'll bet that stock tender hasn't washed himself since he left home.
He said he washed his blankets anyways, just this morning.
Yeah, sure. You know how? He spreads it on an anthill for a couple of hours.
Oh, well, that settles it. I'm sleeping outside.
All right, Chester. We just don't get too cozy. Half the night you're standing guard over Beaudry here. I'll watch him the other half.
Well, I'm not going to run away, Marshal.
You ran once, Beaudry.
All right, I'll tell you something, and maybe you'll trust me a little then.
Tell me what?
Would you like to know who Zimmer is?
Zimmer? He that real testy fella? I don't like him at all. He's always on the prod about something, rather.
Wait a minute, Chester. Wait a minute. What about Zimmer, Beaudry?
His real name is Chess Rhine.
So?
Well, at least that's the name was under his picture.
Well, where was this picture, Beaudry?
In California, tacked onto a pole.
Go on.
Well, I think the reward was $500. Of course, I ain't certain.
You're sure it was his picture?
Yeah, Marshal, I'm sure. Heard a lot of talk about him in Sacramento just before I left.
What kind of talk?
Well, like one time he rode in a stagecoach as a passenger, and he was peaceful enough until some fellows on horses, they stopped that stage in a canyon somewheres, and then this here Chess Rhine, he pulled a gun on the other passengers and he disarmed them whilst the boys outside unloaded the treasure box. They had an extra saddle horse along, and Ryan, he rode off with him. That's the way I heard it.
Seems to me he went to a lot of trouble.
Sometimes the passengers give road agents as much fight as the driver and messenger, Chester. They feel safe because they're inside.
Yeah, and that's what Chess Rhine figured. What, you going to arrest him, Marshal?
I can't arrest a man without cause, Beaudry. You may be telling the truth, but I don't know that for sure. I can check on Zimmer when we get to Fort Donner, but all I can do to Lynn's keep an eye on.
Well, this stage will be robbed long before it gets to Fort Downer, Marshal.
Yeah, maybe, but not without a fight. Thanks for telling me, Beaudry, and for your sake, I hope it's the truth. If it isn't, you're going to be in more trouble than you are now. All right, keep an eye on him, Chester. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yes, sir.
Berryman?
Yeah?
Out here a minute, will you? What's up, mister?
I want to talk to you, that's all. Alone. Come on outside, huh?
Be right back, Hank. Save some of that whiskey for me.
Right, Barry.
What's on your mind, mister?
How long you been an express messenger, Berryman?
2 years. Not that it's any business of yours.
You run into any trouble in that time?
Some. Why?
I just want to know if you can handle yourself, that's all.
You want to find out?
Look, Berryman, you know my name. It's Dillon. I'm Matt Dillon. I'm the U.S. Marshal out of Dodge.
Dillon. Dillon. Yeah, I think I remember seeing you there.
Good. Now tell me this. You carrying much in that treasure box of yours?
The messenger who brought it as far as Pond Creek said it was $50,000, unsigned currency, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Something up, Marshal?
Well, maybe. Tell me, what's the best place for a holdup between here and Fort Donner?
Well, Willow Bend, I expect. Man on a horse could keep hidden there till we were right on top of him.
All right, tell the driver to whip those horses through Willow Bend as fast as they'll go. Chester will be on the roof to help you, and I'll sort of organize the passengers inside.
Well, now if there's going to be a holdup, Marshal, you
well,
should...
Well, I don't know, but we'll play it safe. And, by the way, Berryman, don't let on inside there about this, huh? Or, who I am. All right?
Okay, Marshal.
Thank you. Good night, Berryman.
Night, Marshal. Oh, Marshal.
Yeah?
We got a jug of station whiskey inside if you want a drink.
I don't think it'd do much good. I've heard of that stuff freezing solid on a cold night.
We will return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, backing up the great CBS radio news team election night will be UNIVAC, the new electric brain operating for the first time to bring you faster, more accurate, more complete election night totals. November 4th, starting at 8 p.m. New York time, CBS Radio reports the election returns from coast to coast. Make CBS Radio your election headquarters to hear the trends, the color, and the mounting tide of results reported by Edward R. Murrow, Lowell Thomas, and the rest of the same great CBS radio team that made convention reporting history earlier this year. Now, the second act of Gunsmoke.
Next morning, just after sunup, the stage left Monument Station. It was 10 miles to Willow Bend and 12 miles to the next change of horses at a small swing station run by a lone stock tender. Zimmer, or Chess Ryan, if that's who he was, seemed nervous. Too nervous for an experienced road agent, but maybe he had figured me for what I was, and that gave him the jumps. Anyway, I sat next to him so I could handle him faster if and when the time came. We drove at an easy pace until we neared the bend. And then the driver popped his whip over the teams and they began to run hard. But suddenly he was pulling them in and braking at the same time. One move by Zimmer at that point and I'd have killed or crippled him.
What are we stopping here for? Hey, driver, what's up?
Wheels been dragging. Couldn't you feel it, Paul?
All right, everybody out.
Well, what's that, Ed? Driver, what's wrong?
A wheel's stuck. Can't pull it off with you in there. Come on, hurry it up.
Beaudry, get over there by Chester.
Well, don't you worry about me. You keep an eye on Reed.
Go on now.
Come on.
All right. What do you think, Dylan?
Well, they'd have jumped us by now, Berryman, while everybody was still inside. But keep your head up anyway. You watch the other side of the coach. I'll stay here.
Okay.
What do you mean it wasn't greased? Why not?
It's sizzling hot. We have to cool before we can take it off. That drunken fool at Monument didn't grease this one, that's all. Take a bullwhip to him when I get back there.
Well, you can grease it now, can't you?
I could, mister, if I had any grease.
Well, Mean you haven't got any?
Not unless I render you down and make some. Now get out of my way.
Well, any more of that and I'll... All right, forget it. What are we gonna do?
How about grass, driver?
Hey, that's an idea.
Wrap it around the spindle and go till it wears out. It won't last long, but we can keep putting it on till we get to the next station.
We'll be all day stopping every half mile. Why don't you greenhorns ask a real man how to fix it?
All right, Pop. How are we going to fix it?
Cheese.
Cheese?
Yes, cheese. It works fine, too.
Yeah, it might at that.
I suppose you brought some cheese along just in case, Pop, huh?
I brought it along to eat. You get it? Well, I'll let you have it. It's in my carpet bag.
Old Gant's cheese worked fine, and we left Willow Bend without more trouble. I began to figure Beaudry for a liar, but he just sat there, staring out at the prairie, and said nothing. A few miles further on, as we approached the swing station, I heard a shout from the messenger, and then Beaudry pointed ahead. And I leaned out to take a look. The station was a small one-room adobe hut with the usual corral at the rear, but there wasn't a horse in sight. And out of the two windows facing us poured thin streams of white smoke. As the stage pulled to a stop, I saw two arrows embedded in a half-open door.
Come on, Cheezer. Look at them arrows.
Now, wait a minute. Let me take a look in there.
Let's all take a look, Zimmer.
Where's the stock tender? They kill him?
They tried to fire the place, but it's just smoldering.
Who are those two men?
I don't know. But this one's still alive.
Well, that's the stock tender. But who are those two?
Never mind them. They're dead.
Scalp. Indian sure must have surprised him. Sneaked right up.
All right, Berryman. Let's get the stock tender out of this smoke. Take his head there.
Yeah. They scalped him, too. And he ain't even dead.
Never mind that. Just pick him up easy. It's all right, fella. Stage is here.
Indians, Comanches, they scalped me. Never even heard them.
Ask him who those other men were. What were they doing here?
Leave him be. The man's dying.
Water. Give me a drink.
Chester, get the water bag.
Yes, sir.
Can't you let the man alone, Dillon?
Scalped three men and stole horses. That's Comanches for you.
Here's the water, sir.
Oh, thanks. Here, fella. Here now. Take a drink. There we go.
Road agents, those two, they held me up. They said they'd hide till the horses were unhitched. And then hold up the stage. Had a partner on the stage to keep the passengers out of it.
What was his name? Their partner, I mean.
Put my head down, mister. It's bubbling over.
The stock tender's eyes clouded up and went blank as I lay his head back. And then there was a scuffle behind me, and before anybody could move, Zimmer grabbed Gant, and using him as a shield, he walked backward toward the stage. The old man stopped struggling when he felt Zimmer's gun in his back, and the rest of us just stood there watching, helpless.
First man draws a gun, Gant'll die.
You gave yourself away, Chess Ryan.
Take it easy, man. Take it easy. This fool's nervous.
Shut up. You, driver. Lead those teams down the road a piece, and then come back here. Yan and I will take the stage alone. Come on!
You better do what he says, driver. He's scared enough to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm better. Come on.
Come on. What are you stopping for? Take him 50 yards down there.
Can't do it. That wheel's froze up again. He ain't going anywhere at that stage.
Might as well give up right now, young fool.
I never did like you, Gant.
Ryan, listen to me.
You've made your play and you've lost. If you give up now, the charges will be attempted robbery. If you don't, they'll probably turn into murder.
Who are you anyway, mister?
I'm a U.S. Marshal.
Well, you're not arresting nobody. Not unless you want Gant dead. You make a move and his blood will be on your hands, Marshal.
You can't hold him there forever, Ryan. The stage going west passes through sometime today. What'll you do then?
He's right. That stage passes this station about noon. I drive it myself half the time.
I'll think of something. I want all your men to unload your weapons. Line up and throw them in a pile there. One at a time. Would you even start to try anything and I'll blow a hole in the old man.
You think you would, Mr. Dillon?
He's so nervous now, it's a wonder he doesn't do it by accident, Chester.
Why, get going. Don't stand there. One at a time now. And use two fingers to do it.
All right, man, you better do as he says.
Now?
Go ahead. Easy. All right. Next man.
Beaudry.
Yeah?
You're the only man who might stop this.
What? How?
Pretend to join him.
You trust me that much?
I have to.
Okay,
Marshal. All right, easy now. Two fingers. All right. Next man.
Ryan.
Hold it right there, Beaudry.
Well, I'm not armed, Ryan. Look. But you know why?
Too yellow, maybe.
Oh, the Marshal's got my gun. I'm under arrest.
He's taking you in, is that it?
He was, till I woke up just now. I killed a man in Dodge, Ryan. They want to hang me for it.
Now, Beaudry, we told you you'd get a fair trial.
Chester,
and what's more...
shut up.
Yes, sir.
Look, you haven't got much chance alone, Ryan. But you and me, we can disarm these men, throw away their guns, and ride off on those horses without the coach.
You do that, Beaudry, and I'll quit my job and run you down if I have to chase you all the way to Oregon. I couldn't show up in Dodge after this anyway.
Well, I'll be watching for you, Marshal. It beats hanging. Well, how about it, Ryan?
Make a fool out of Dillon, huh? I'd like that. I pick up a gun, Beaudry, and get over here.
I'm warning you, Beaudry.
Sorry. I figure I'll live longer this way, Marshal.
Yeah. Yeah, you hold the old man, Beaudry. I want a free hand.
Yeah. I'll kill Gant quicker than Ryan would. Any of you men try anything?
You heard him? Let's get this over with. Fast.
Ryan, I want to tell you something.
That's far enough, Marshal. All that...
that gun in your hand, Ryan, you better keep it on me. You even glance at Beaudry and I'll draw and kill you.
What are you talking about?
You shoot me and Beaudry will kill you from behind.
What?
That's right, Ryan. Gant, you walk back over towards the hut so he can see I let you go.
He tricked you, too. But I can still kill you, Marshal.
Yeah, that's right, Ryan. You can still kill me. But I'm paid to die. I settled that in my mind when I took this job. It's only a matter of time. But what about you, Ryan? You ready to die?
You can't do this.
I'm doing it, Ryan. I'm doing it now. I'm going to walk right up to you, and you're going to give me that gun.
Stop, Marshal.
I'll put a slug in your spine if you shoot, Ryan.
Let me have the gun, Ryan. Easy,
no.
Ryan. Now!
Did he hit you, Mr. Dillon?
No, he waited a second too long.
Worked, Marshal. By golly, it worked.
Yeah, you did fine, Beaudry. I'm going to remember it.
Yeah.
Now give me back that gun.
What? You still going to take me in?
Of course.
No, that don't seem fair, Dillon.
I'm only a marshal, Beaudry, not a judge.
Oh. I'm not sure I wouldn't rather die right here.
Wait, Beaudry. Now, I'll testify at your trial, and I promise you it'll be a fair one, but that's all. Now, give me the gun.
You don't make it easy, Marshal.
My job's to bring you in. Any way I can get you there.
Dead or alive, huh?
That's right.
Here's the gun.
Thank you. The next day, I turned Chess Ryan over to the Army at Fort Donner. The colonel wanted credit for sending him back to California, and I wanted to be rid of him. Took us 3 days to ride back to Dodge. On the way, we got to be real good friends with Joe Boudry. I wouldn't let him have his gun back. But even so, he managed to supply us with antelope steaks every morning. I made him borrow Chester's gun.
Gunsmoke, transcribed under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin and Lou Krugman, with Vic Perrin, Junius Matthews, Jim Nusser, and Ralph Moody. Parley Bayer is Chester. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Thousands of acres of timber are afire in the Midwest, New England, Far West, and Southern areas. This is a word of warning to all who may be in or near woodlands. Take every precaution to avoid setting fires with cigarettes, matches, campfires. Timber is vital to America's defense. Human lives and property are at stake, too. Hunters especially are urged to exercise caution. Any further damage may result in suspension of the hunting season indefinitely. Clancy Cassell speaking, and remember, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy open fire on your funny bone Sunday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
Is this thing glitching out on me? If I hear any more of that, we'll switch to the other computer, because we're about to present a lost episode of Quiet Please. That was the 28th episode of Gunsmoke, October 31st, 1952. We'll hear the next one on next week's program. But right now, thanks to Jerry Hendiges, OTRsite.com, one of the major collectors of radio transcription discs, and, you know, you often, or maybe not often enough, but you tend to uncover things that are not generally circulating amongst the traders and collectors, and this Quiet Please episode is one of those. As soon as I saw the non-label, it was just a little white grease marker on a black disc. But when I saw the title, it said Ticonderoga, and I said, that's one of the missing episodes. So I pleaded, I begged, and Jerry kindly uploaded it and shared it with the world. So unlike, you know, we've played Quiet Please more than once in the runs on this program. And unlike the discs, most of the discs were from the collection of the author, Willis Cooper, and they were not well kept and they were not well copied when someone got their hands on them for apparently a very short period of time. This one is very different. There's no snap, crackle, and pop. It's all pure audio. So, in wonderful sound, we have for you the 41st episode of Quiet Please, from March 15th, 1948, Meeting at Ticonderoga. It's another one of those historic episodes taking place on and around 1758, Fort Ticonderoga, upstate New York. I've been there. I saw the pictures online, and I said, yeah, I was there. We walked around that place. Why don't we just hear? Let me tell you who's in the cast, other than Ernest Chappell, who's the lead in every episode, is the man who speaks to you. We have J. Pat O'Malley, Norman Mackay, Ellen Fenwick, Court Benson, and Ted Osborne. Written and directed by Willis Cooper. Music by Albert Berman. Let's listen now to this lost episode of Quiet Please, Meeting in Ticonderoga. This is the Golden Age Radio, WBAI, New York.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please for tonight is called Meeting at Ticonderoga.
No, sir. They were not married. Yeah, they never saw each other in life. I suppose they're buried in the same cemetery lot because each one of them is a legend in these parts. Jane McRae. You'd think that's Scots, wouldn't you? I don't know, but there's a Scots flavor about the McRae. And you cannot deny that his name is as Scots as Claymore and Skeen do. I didn't know so much about Miss McRae, save that she was massacred by the Indians about the time of Saratoga, which, as you know, is not so far away from here. She was to have married an officer in Gentleman Johnny Burgoyne's army that come down from the north and that Benedict Arnold tore into ribbons, although Horatio Gates took the credit and later laid the foundation for Benedict's defection. Miss McRae was a famous beauty of the region, and they killed her and scalped her and paraded her long tresses about. It was the story of her barbarous death that stirred the people of the countryside to rally at Saratoga for one of the decisive battles of the world. But him... No, he was before that time. Me? No, I'm not for this town. I'm from Saratoga. You've been there. Aye, so. Can you read the inscription on his gravestone? Here lies the body of Duncan Campbell of Inverawe, Esquire, Major of the Old Highland Regiment, age 55 years, who died the 17th of July, 1758, of the wounds received at the attack of the retrenchments of Ticonderoga, or Carry On. Yes, retrenchments, that's what it says. Should be entrenchments, of course, but I suppose the village stonecutter in those days was not used to military terms. The old Highland Regiment. That was the Black Watch. The oldest Highland Regiment in the British Army. The 42nd Regiment of Foot. The bunny lads that have worn the red hackalabuna braid bonnets in 1795. Duncan Campbell of Inverawe was its major under Lieutenant Colonel Francis Grant in 1758. And he and many a good Highland laddie of the Black Watch was killed at Ticonderoga. No, that was before Ethan Allen's time. The fort was just newly completed in the summer of 1758. And it was 17 years before Ethan Allen took it away from a sick man, a garrison of 20 soldiers. Montcalm was in command of Ticonderoga that summer. Aye, the same man that Wolfe defeated at Quebec later. Abercrombie was the British general. Yes, I know a good deal about it. I'm an old inhabitant of these parts. About Duncan Campbell of Inverawe now. A good man. A thoughtful man, God-fearing, good to all his fellows. It was his goodness that brought him to his death, so that he sleeps far away from the banks of the River Awe, with no descendant in all the world to mourn him. Have you the time, then? I'll tell you. Duncan Campbell had been casting up his accounts that night in the old hall of Inverawe House, and he sat alone on the night that was to seal his fate, all unknowing. Can I see him, friend, a great, kindly, lonely man at an oaken table, scratching away at his papers with his quill in the candlelight? The shadows flickering aboon his head in the gloom, picking out tiny flashes of silver on the basket hilts of the bread clamores upon the wall. Can I you see him stop to his feet at the sound of someone knocking, hammering on the great door along the Inverawe House in the middle of the night? And plucking up one of the little pistols they call Scots dags and striding to the door in the dark to see what manner of man has come at this hour to call upon the laird of Inverawe. And unbolting the door and flinging it open to whatever should be outside.
Let me in. Oh, gently, man. Who are you?
They're out after me. Quick, shut the door. Lock it, for the love of heaven.
There. Now, friend, I'd say you're safe. At least for the moment.
You won't let them get me?
Oh, what have you done, lad?
Murder,
eh? Well, murder's been done before in Scotland. Had you a good cause?
As good a cause as any man ever had.
And you were seen.
Will you hide me?
No man has ever claimed hospitality of me without receiving it.
Will you hide me?
Well, come with me. Oh, you hurt yourself.
It's nothing.
Well, you fought then?
Yes, we fought.
Listen. What did you hear?
Horse, I thought.
Be still. Aye. You were right, man.
They're coming.
Oh, we haven't much time. Well, let me see.
Don't let them in.
Here, come with me.
They're coming here. They're coming here. Do you hear them?
Aye, I hear them. But don't fuss yourself new. I'll pick your wasses. Nobody will find you.
What?
I said I'll hide you.
What do you mean? Nobody will ever find me.
Well, just what I said.
Oh, you just meant hide me.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, I thought...
Oh, man, did you think I meant I'd hide your body? A Campbell of Inverawe has not yet been accused of treachery, man.
I didn't mean it. They are coming here.
Gang inside.
What's this place?
Didn't he show your face at yon window? And sit you quiet here, and I'll come and fetch you something to eat when they're gone.
You won't let them get me.
I've given my word, man, and I don't like to hate duted by any man. I wouldn't turn you over to him.
Swear it, then.
Look, I'm not accustomed to swear such things. My word's good enough for my own folk. Should be good enough for you.
No, swear you'll keep me safe. There they are, swear to me.
Oh, well, then. I answer a fool according to his folly. I swear upon my dirk that I will never betray you to mortal man. There. Is that enough? Now, stay a war frae the window and frae the door.
Inverawe!
Oh, come on, go to the door in case they suspect.
And so on such a night, Duncan Campbell of Inverawe drees his weird. Thus, by his pride and his own honor, he draws his fate upon him, friend. For this nameless man who found sanctuary in the house of Inverawe, this nameless slayer in the night, his is the hand of death. They who waited upon Duncan Campbell at midnight were kinsmen of his. And they were out upon the braes in the darkness, searching the countryside for one who had slain a kinsman. The man who had murdered Donald Campbell, blood kin to the laird of Inverawe. And the description of the murderer was that of the man who lay in the upper room and trembled at the sound of angry voices in the hall. Aye, hot tears started from the eyes of Duncan Campbell at the grisly news of his cousin's passing in hot blood and the thought of his own impotence in the matter. I know in these latter days men make little of an oath. And besides, it is true that Duncan Campbell had good cause to break his solemn sworn word when he knew that he sheltered the red-handed murderer of Donald. But
I have not seen the murderer.
Belike his heart shuddered at his words. His gorge rose that he must say them. I have said Duncan Campbell of Inverawe was an honorable man. A man whose word was sacred. And whose oath was triply sacred.
I have not seen the murderer.
Then the kinsman turned away into the night, satisfied. And the rising moon struck sharp glints on the naked broadswords as they mounted and rode again. And Duncan Campbell returned again to the little upper room.
They went away. You didn't tell them.
Wish, man. I'll hear speech with you now. And for the last time, you are no Scot, or you could not know how sacred is the bond between kinsmen. You could not know how it's my immemorial duty to take your life.
No!
For the one you have taken, my cousin.
No, no, don't kill me. You swore.
Oh, peace. I swore, aye. And I could tear my tongue out for the words that I said. But you'll not die by my hand. Nor because of any words I'll say.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Oh, be still. At the first light of dawn, I'll take you away to the mountain where you can hide yourself until my cousins are sure you have escaped.
No, no, let me stay here.
I will not have my cousin's slayer in my house.
They'll find me.
They will not. I have sworn. And I will keep my oath.
In the great master's room at Inverawe stands an ancient canopied bed. And Duncan Campbell tossed sleepless upon it until at last his tired body could hold out no more, and he slept. Then it seemed to him as he slept that he heard light footsteps approaching the door of his room from the balcony outside. And in the darkness, his door opened, and a man came in. And for a long time, there was no sound until Duncan Campbell raised himself upon his elbow and looked upon the face of his murdered cousin. And though the room was black dark, he could see the gouts of blood upon his cousin's plaidy. And at long last...
Who's that?
Inverawe.
Who's that?
You know me, Inverawe. Duncan, murder has been done. The blood of your kinsman has been shed.
Hey, Donald.
Shield not the murderer, Inverawe. The morning was very near. And with the first light, Duncan Campbell awoke from his fitful sleep and went to the secret room where the murderer lay. Duncan Campbell might have slain the man as he slept, but he did not. Out across the braes to the slopes of Encroke, and he led the man. And never a word did he speak until they'd come to a secret cave high above the Valley of the Awe.
Here you'll be safe.
Don't leave me here. Take me back.
No.
Please take me
back. Oh, happy man. Aki, last night, one came to me in a dream. The man you murdered.
Oh, no.
And he spoke to me.
Oh, no.
And I know I'm in danger of my immortal soul.
But you...
For he knows I've hidden you.
No.
And he bade me, shield not the murderer.
Oh, no, no, no.
Well, will you give yourself up?
No. No, no, you swore. You swore.
Aye. So... And I'll keep my oath.
And on a second midnight, the ghastly figure of Donald Campbell came again to haunt his cousin who held his honor above the ancient duty of vengeance for a slain kinsman. And again Duncan Campbell spoke of his oath, and the figure vanished. Then again, a midnight when the storm lashed the slopes of Ben Croken, and the wind howled above the eaves of Inverall House, and the lad lay alone in the canopy bed.
I can't break my oath, Donald. Oh, I didn't ken it was you had slain. I tell you.
Shield not the murderer, Inverall.
Oh, what can I do? You wouldn't have me break my given oath.
A blow for a blow, Inverall. And blood for blood.
Nay. Oh, I can't do it.
Then farewell, Inverall. Oh,
no, I can't. I can't.
Farewell. Until we two shall meet at Ticonderoga. And on the morrow, in the brightness of the sun above a storm, Duncan Campbell climbed the slopes of Benkrogan again. No man can say what was in his mind, but he carried his great battle claymore, and its shining blade mocked him as he made his way up the mountainside to the little hidden cave. The murderer was gone, and no man has ever found him. Yes, Ticonderoga was the name the ghost spoke to Duncan Campbell that night more than 200 years ago. And Duncan Campbell, or any Scot for that matter, had ever heard that name before. For at that time, Ticonderoga was a name that only the Indians knew. And there was no fort there where the waters flow between Lake George and Lake Champlain. And mind you, it is clear that Duncan Campbell heard that name many years before any other white man in the whole world. It is written down in his handwriting long years before he came to America. About that time, 10 companies of Highlanders were banded together in a regiment to watch upon the braes. And the Earl of Crawford gave his name to the regiment. But soon they became known as the Black Watch, from the dark regimental tartan they wore, and wear to this day. And among the gentry that became members of the Black Watch was Duncan Campbell of Inverawe. In the years since the ghost of his cousin spoke to him, Duncan Campbell had become a more dour man, a man hag-ridden by his conscience. And I can imagine him one day calling his kinsmen together, speaking to them as this thing that rankled in his breast. I can imagine the elder of the clan sitting in judgment upon him.
Inverawe, he acted aright. It is a sad thing that you didn't know the man had murdered your own cousin. For gin you had, you'd have slain him yourself. And justice would have been done. But a Campbell's word, yince given, may not be broken despite all provocation. And I say that you have acquitted yourself with due honor. That is my judgment. Still in awe, I wouldn't have been happy to have on my soul. Well, this Ticonderoga that your cousin Donald spoke of, you haven't heard of the place ever, you say?
No.
Ah, nor I. Well, is there such a place?
Well, I didn't ken. But the name is forever in my mind.
Ah, well, I wouldn't have fashed myself about it more, Inverawe. For it's well known that the dead have wisdom not vouchsafed us who walk the earth. And it may be that this is another name they have for the afterlife. Go your way, Inverawe, and fear not. Ye are a man of honor.
So Duncan Campbell took some comfort from his elder's words. Slowly the name Ticonderoga faded out of his memory. He served honorably and well in the Black Watch, and the day came when he became its major. Major he was when the regiment sailed for the Americas to fight in what people call today the French and Indian War. Abercrombie commanded the British and the Provincials. They were encamped down at Albany. And they marched northwards. It was a braw sight with the Black Watch in front, their pipers and the bright red Stuart tartan bravely skirling cock of the north. The white gaiters of 1,000 men swinging along beneath the dark cloud that was the 12-yard Black Watch plate. Northward they marched in the summertime, and the hearts of the country folk were gay, because this was the army that would end the depredations of the savage Indians and the fierce Frenchmen. And there was an evening in a village along the way when the men walked in little groups through the town, gawking at the strange customs of the colonials. Major Duncan Campbell himself walked along a flower-scented lane, and there was a young girl who spoke to him.
Good evening to you, soldier.
Why, good evening, my child.
You're a Scotchman, aren't you?
I'm not. Free the Black Watch.
We never saw any Scotch before. Do all Scotch people wear dresses like that?
Aye, most yes. Yes, they were forbid. But nae mair.
They look strange on a man.
Aye, well, we wouldn't feel at home in breeks, you can.
What?
What's your name, lassie?
Ellen.
Ellen, eh? Yeah. Have a lass at home that's about your own age.
A daughter?
Aye. Her name's Seanad. I haven't seen her for a year.
Is she pretty?
Aye. Her hair's darker than yours.
Does she wear a dress like you?
Oh, no. In Scotland, girls wear skirts. But we're not savages, you can.
We're glad you're here.
Well, thank you, lassie.
Will you be coming back this way?
Coming back?
After you take Ticonderoga.
Ticonderoga. A name almost forgotten, conjured up out of nothing by a girl in a strange American village. Duncan Campbell had never heard the name in the army.
They said we were to attack at Fort Carillon.
Aye, that's what the French call it, Duncan.
Aye, but the girl said Ticonderoga.
Aye, that's the Indian name of the place.
Yeah, have you heard the name Ticonderoga before?
Why, I think so.
Oh. Is anyone else?
I believe so, Duncan.
And you were keeping it a secret from me.
Duncan, the real name of the place is Carillon, I tell you.
Ticonderoga.
Until we meet at Ticonderoga. I wish you could have seen it, friend. More than 15,000 men loading into boats at Fort Edward on a summer's day. The Highlanders, the Royal Americans, the 17th, the 46th, a dozen British regiments and more provincials, loading into boats to make their way up to Ticonderoga. And Abercrombie himself called Major Duncan Campbell of Inverwaugh into his quarters as the loading began, spoke to him of Ticonderoga, for he had heard the story, too. Abercrombie told him he was keeping two companies of the Black Watch at Fort Edward.
My duty is with my regiment, sir.
Abercrombie told him he had heard the story. He did not wish to risk the loss of a brave officer.
Sir, whether or not R.D. is of small moment, I have my honor to consider.
And Abercrombie, who had done his best, could do no more. And in the first of the boats rode Duncan Campbell of Inverawe, Major of the Black Watch. There was a landing at the cove below Ticonderoga, the British columns hacking their way through the forest. And there was the first brush with the Frenchmen and the death of a beloved officer, Brigadier General Air George Howe. There was a long struggle against the blackness of the woods, the regiments hopelessly entangled, and the weary way back to the landing. Then the French, waiting implacably up there at the unfinished fort, building their earthworks, cutting down trees, sharpening their bayonets, weighing out their powder, waiting for the assault. And a British general who should have known better, for his attack on Ticonderoga was childish. Many men died for his foolishness. but that's past. Let me tell you of Duncan Campbell, who lies buried here. It was dark in the forest, and Duncan Campbell and his friend were searching for soldiers that had straggled away and found themselves in a hopeless wilderness of trees. The eminence of Ticonderoga weighed heavy on Duncan Campbell's heart.
I've made my will.
I think you're worrying about this too much, Duncan.
No.
It was only a dream.
Perhaps. Perhaps. But he said Ticonderoga. And that was, how many years ago? No, this is where I be.
The ghost didn't say this is where you'd be.
I didn't need to. I ken it well. No, we're off here, we Scots, and we ken the hand of fate. I wouldn't have chosen it this way, but this is the way it's to be. And, I'm content.
Yeah, we should forget.
No, it cannot be forgot. I shall not go away from here.
Or shall we go back to the shore? There cannot be any more soldiers out here now. And if there are, they just have to stay.
Aye, so. War's cruel, we men.
Aye.
Hey, wait.
Eh?
There's a soldier.
Where? I didn't see it.
By yon tall bush. A Scot, too. Hey there, you.
I didn't see anyone, Duncan.
He's sitting there, probably falling asleep. Hey. Oh, I'll run over and wake him. How some of these gillies can fall asleep anywhere, anytime.
Where are you going? I didn't see it.
Hey, soldier. Hey, come on, wake up. Come on, man, wake up. What? Oh.
Aye, Duncan. We're well met.
Where did you see this soldier, Duncan?
You see anybody?
Why? Of course not.
Hey, Donald. We are well met.
Duncan Campbell of Inveraw, who died of wounds received at the attack on Ticonderoga. He was a good man, was Inveraw. No, thank you. I must go back to Ticonderoga. Though I don't mind the walk, I'm used to it. I visit Duncan's grave every day. Have for years. My name? My name's Donald Campbell. I'm Inveraw's cousin.
Listen to Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And J. Pat O'Malley, whom we're always glad to welcome on Quiet, Please, was Inveraw. Others in the cast were Norman Mackay, Ellen Fenwick, Court Benson, and Ted Osborne. Original music for Quiet, Please is composed and played by Albert Berman. Now, for a word about next week's Quiet, Please, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
My story for next week is called A Night to Forget. It's about a man who wished he could and couldn't.
And so, until next week at this same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please comes to you from New York. This is the world's largest network serving more than 450 radio stations, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Lost episode of Quiet Please, heard on the radio for the first time since it was probably originally broadcast on March 15th, 1948, episode number 41, Meeting at Ticonderoga. So thank you, Jerry Hendigas, for providing that to us all. Well, up next, premiering in January of 1946 on U.S. radio was The Fat Man, which in this country starred J. Scott Smart. However, having played the few of the surviving episodes of that series, we're going to turn to the Australian version. Episode number 46 from June 30th, 1955. I believe these are largely based on the American scripts, however, so these are probably some of the shows you would have heard in this country. Murder Shows Eyes in the Dark. Lloyd Burrell stars as Brad Runyon, the fat man. So let's hear it, shall we?
There he goes into that drugstore. He's stepping on the scales.
Weight 239 pounds. Fortune, danger.
Who is it?
The Fat Man. The Fat Man in Murder Shows Eyes in the Dark. Volume clock on top of my office desk said 10 to 5 when the phone rang. I don't know why, but when I started to pick up the receiver, I noticed the rays of the setting sun as they came through the window and landed on the dark red blotter atop my desk. For some odd reason, it reminded me of blood. Hello?
Is this Mr. Runyon's office?
This is Mr. Runyon speaking.
Oh, you're the private detective they call the Fat Man?
Among other things.
My name is Craig, Mrs. Brandon Craig. I have a job for you.
What kind of a job?
Well, I'd rather not explain over the telephone. Are you available for $500?
For $500, I'm not only available, I can almost give you an exclusive contract.
The address is 772 Crest Avenue, Kent House Apartment.
Are you sure you don't want to give me an idea of what this is all about?
I can only say you're going to have to earn your money, Mr. Runyon, in a very unexpected way.
Yes, sir?
Mrs. Craig, please.
Who shall I say is calling, sir?
Brad Runyon.
I'm sorry, sir, but Mrs. Craig is not available right now.
What do you mean she's not available? She called me 20 minutes ago and told me to come over.
She's not seeing anyone, Mr. Runyon.
Look, Jeeves.
Willis is my name, sir.
Mrs. Craig said it was important. Now, are you going to let me through?
Please, don't goad me into forcing you out with my hand, sir.
You're big enough to try. It might be fun.
Willis. Willis. I'll handle this.
Very good, madam. Mrs. Craig?
Yes.
I'm Brad Runyon.
Who?
The Fat Man.
Obviously. But just what did you want?
Are you kidding?
You please take your business and leave.
Say, what kind of gag is this? Maybe my bankroll doesn't rate a penthouse, lady, but I have to work for a living, and when I come traipsing up...
All right. Here.
That's it.
$20 for your trouble. Now, please go.
In other words, you've changed your mind.
Yes.
I was just going to ask you why, but that isn't necessary now.
Good.
My eyesight's pretty fair, Mrs. Craig. But I wouldn't need to be an eagle to look over your shoulder through the open door of that bedroom.
And see what, Mr. Runyon?
The body of a man on the floor. The top of his head blown off. He's got no identification. Who is he?
A man named Roberts.
Have you called the police?
No, not yet. It only happened a few minutes ago. He was the reason I phoned you before, Mr. Runyon. He's been seeing my daughter, Lois, and I felt he was dangerous. And I wanted to hire you to protect her.
Where is she now?
Well, I don't know, but that doesn't matter.
No.
You see, I killed him. He forced his way into my house a few minutes ago, and he threatened to strike me. I killed him in self-defense.
Where's the gun?
The gun? Oh, why, I threw it away.
Where?
I don't remember. Isn't it enough that I admit the murder? What more do you want?
Proof, Mrs. Craig. You say you shot him in self-defense. What did he try to do? Attack you with his fist?
Yes, that's it, Mr. Runyon.
Then how come the bullet entered his head through the back?
The back?
What are you trying to do? Protect your daughter?
She didn't kill him. She couldn't have killed him. Lois isn't a murderess.
Now, let's have the truth. When did you find the body?
10 minutes ago, I called you from a drugstore. I'd been away from the apartment all the afternoon, looking for Lois.
Where was this cultured gorilla at the time?
Willis came in after I did, Mr. Runyon.
And who frisked the corpse?
What?
Who searched the body?
Has it been searched?
His pockets are inside out. They didn't crawl out of his coat and pants by themselves.
I went to his pocket, Mr. Runyon.
Not for money, I presume. What are you holding in your fist, Mrs. Craig? Let's have it.
It's just the key.
Taken from Robert?
Yes.
Penn Station number 871.
Do you know what that means?
This key fits a public locker in Pennsylvania, station number 871. At any rate, we'll find out soon enough, right after I call the police. The lockers are over on this side, Mackenzie.
Hey, you say Mrs. Craig admitted killing this guy?
But her story didn't make much sense. She seemed to be covering for her daughter, Lois.
Here are the station lockers.
Number 871.
There it is. Hey, what's inside, Brad?
This.
A woman's purse.
And heavy, too. I had an idea her lipstick wouldn't weigh that much.
That gun's a German Luger, Brad.
With two bullets missing.
Yeah, what else is in that bag?
A compact. With a name engraved on the top. The name
is Lois, the daughter of Mrs. Craig. All right, Mrs. Craig, you're free to go now. You're released from custody.
Mr. Runyon.
Well?
Are you still interested in handling this case? My original offer still stands.
You may be paying to help put your daughter in the chair.
I'll take that chance. I still think you'll get additional evidence and save her.
I'm not making any promises. I'll do what I can.
Oh, you'll have your check in the morning mail. Good day, Sergeant McKenzie. I'll be at home if you want me again.
Well, Brad, you made yourself an easy fee.
Thanks, so, Max.
Well, all we have to do is locate the girl. Questioning, Mrs. Craig admitted she really discovered the key in her daughter's jewel case.
Hello?
Mr. Runyon?
Yes?
I've been trying to reach your office for an hour.
I just got in. Who's this?
Mrs. Craig's daughter.
Welcome home, Lois.
Don't try to trace this call, Mr. Runyon. It won't do you any good.
What's on your mind?
I want to know if I can trust you.
That all depends. You're getting kind of popular with the police.
They think that I killed John Roberts.
Their suspicions run in that direction.
Well, I didn't. And I can prove it to you.
Oh, get at it.
Can you meet me in half an hour?
Where?
Down on the corner of 5th and 12th Streets at 8 o'clock sharp, and I'll have someone pick you up.
Do you want me to wear a red geranium in my buttonhole?
this is not a laughing matter, Mr. Runyon.
I'm not even snickering.
Look for a black sedan at 8. If there's anybody with you, you won't hear from me again.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
May I come in?
You're in already.
You're the fat man.
You're real sharp, aren't you?
And you're looking for the girl who killed John Roberts.
Who are you?
Lucille Roberts, his wife.
Sedan.
Had you found her?
Did I found who?
Lois.
What makes you think I'm looking for
her? She killed John and you know it. Look, I've got a proposition to make to you.
I like propositions. Stop making.
When you locate Lois, if you give me 5 minutes with her before you turn her over to the police, I'll pay you $100.
That's $20 per minute for someone else's time. Not bad.
Will you do it?
The police might let you see her for 10 minutes, and for nothing.
But I don't want her turned over to the police, Mr. Runyon.
No. Why not?
Because I want to kill her myself.
I arrived at 512th Street at 7:50. There was a convenient lamppost on the corner to lean against. I had a quick smoke as I watched the thin stream of traffic passing by. 12th and 5th is in the village. But it's a far cry from the cafeterias nearby where the long-haired poets and the long-winded writers discuss their art with a capital A. The section I was in was quiet, and its elegance subdued. At 8 sharp, I saw a black sedan slow up and park across the street. It was a big job, and the guy behind the wheel was in proportion. He looked me over and made sure I was alone. Then he nosed his car across the street and pulled up alongside of me. I wasn't surprised when I recognized his face. It was Mrs. Craig's butler, Willis.
Good evening, Mr. Runyon.
Out for a drive and a little fresh air, Willis.
It's not a bad idea, sir. Won't you step in, please?
Where are we going?
You'll be aware of our destination, sir, when we arrive.
You may not know it, Willis, but you're playing with dynamite.
Really, sir?
Lois is wanted by the police for murder.
So I understand.
And withholding information from the police doesn't exactly get you in good with the DA.
I'm prepared to accept full responsibility for my acts, Mr. Runyon.
That's mighty big of you.
If you don't mind my saying so, I'm not a very appreciative audience for sarcasm.
And I don't like being driven around to strange places like a 4-year-old in a kiddie car.
I'm taking you where you want to go, Mr. Runyon. Isn't that sufficient?
That all depends on what I find when I get there. You sound like you're still taking driving lessons, Willis.
I'm sorry, sir. It's something I can't avoid. You see, I occasionally find it rather difficult to maneuver this car with a revolver. Will you step into the living room, Mr. Runyon? I'll mix you a drink, sir.
Don't bother. I'm not thirsty.
Hello?
Hello.
You're right on time, Mr. Runyon.
Am I?
I'm Lois. Will you have a drink?
Not right now.
Leave the glasses on the table, Willis.
Very good, miss.
You know, you surprise me.
Do I?
I heard that they call you the fat man. And I expected to meet some overstuffed individual with enormous jowls and stubby fingers. But you're not like that at all.
I'm not exactly anemic either.
You're virile. That's the word that describes you perfectly. Virile. And interesting.
All right, Lois. I'm practically wallowing in your charm. Let's get back to business.
Oh, there really isn't any hurry.
There was when you had me on the phone a little while ago. What do you do? Specialize in quick changes?
I wanted to get to know you before I asked you to help me.
Okay. We're old pals. Now, what's the gimmick?
First of all, let me tell you that I did not murder John Roberts. I was not with him at all on the day that he was killed.
That's an alibi that might be useful, providing you can get someone else to back it up for you.
Willis will testify to that.
Willis? Well, that's fine. The DA will be glad to hear it. Especially when he finds out that Willis likes to carry a .45 in his car.
I tell you, I had nothing to do with John's death. As a matter of fact, I broke off with him the day before.
Why?
Because I found out he was only interested in me for my money.
Where have I heard that tune before?
Oh. I suppose I loved him at one time, but that's all in the past. It was ancient history before he was killed.
Sounds like a good yarn, Lois, but the edges need polishing.
What do you mean?
Your handbag was found in Penn Station with a murder weapon inside.
The murder weapon?
It was a German Luger. The kind that makes a hole as big as your fist.
I don't know anything about a gun. And I don't know how it got in my bag.
That's not an alibi anymore, honey. That's just a denial. You can say no until the cows come home. The evidence still says yes.
Mr. Lanyon.
Yeah?
How can anybody as interesting as you be so stubborn?
I'm not stubborn, Lois. I just learned how to add two and two when I went to school.
Don't you want to help me?
If you want my help, you'll have to play according to the rules.
Anything you say.
What else do you know about this case?
I know who killed John Roberts.
All right, who?
His wife.
That's as good a guess as any.
I tell you, she murdered him. That's why I asked you to come here. I know that you can prove it.
You mean you want me to try?
Would you?
I will on one condition.
Go on.
You give yourself up to the police and we start from scratch.
What?
You heard me.
Are you crazy?
Not particularly.
You want me to stick my head in a noose?
It's in one already. You've got nothing to lose.
Haven't I?
You can't hide out forever.
I can see that you and I will never agree.
You're making a big mistake, Lois. The longer you hide out, the guiltier you look.
And you want me to give myself up?
That's right.
All right. I will. When I get good and ready.
It must have been Willis who slugged me from behind. I tried to turn and grab his leg, but he came down with it once more. That was all I remembered for a long, long time. A year later, maybe it was only an hour, I started to come to. Somebody seemed to be pushing me underwater. I couldn't catch my breath. Then I opened my eyes and saw that my ocean was just a trickle of water coming from a leaky faucet, dropping into a filthy sink in the corner of the room. I didn't know where I was, but even with a housing shortage, I wouldn't have picked a dump like that to live in. The floor was littered with rubbish, and the walls seemed to be renting out space exclusively to termites. I was lying on a dirty cot with my hands tied behind me, and my feet bound at the ankles. I couldn't move, and my head felt like a locomotive steam box with the pressure up. But I could hear. And I wondered if the guy who was sneaking up behind me was going to slug me again.
Mr. Runyon.
Well, Mrs. Roberts, fancy meeting you here.
I trailed you when you left your office. I followed you to that apartment and then waited outside. That's when that big man dragged you out and drive you here.
Incidentally, where is that big man?
He's hiding his car in the brush. We're in a shack outside the city line. My car's about a quarter of a mile down the road.
The conversation is interesting, but I'd appreciate a little more action in getting these ropes off.
Well, I'm trying, but not so tight.
There's a penknife in my vest pocket. No, the lower left one.
Oh, yeah, I've got it.
Easy now. Hey, don't mistake my wrist for a side of ham.
There. Your arms are free. Oh, he's coming back. I can see him through the window.
Get behind that curtain, quick.
What are you going to do?
Lie here with my hands behind my back, temporarily.
Mr. Runyon.
Oh, are you awake, Mr. Runyon?
Oh, what hit me.
I did, sir. You showed very bad judgment in trying to struggle after the first blow.
Oh, here.
What did you say, Mr. Runyon?
Bend over so I can tell you something.
I'm too weak to...
Certainly, sir.
There. I can hear you now, sir.
Then listen to that.
Ooh. Oh. Mr. Runyon.
Give me that knife so I can free my leg.
What did you do to him?
Dislocated his jaw, I hope.
Ah, that's that.
All right, there's another piece of rope on that chair. I can make knots as well as he can.
Are you going to leave him here?
He'll get his ride back to town in a cop's prowl car. I've got too many things to do to lug him along. You say you saw him drag me out of that house?
Yes. Lois was with him.
What happened to her?
He dropped her off at a Crest Avenue apartment house. Number 772.
That's where her mother lives.
I know. I followed my husband to that house on the day he was killed. I've been doing a little detective work on my own, Mr. Runyon. Ever since I found out about the fancy presents John was getting from that girl.
You say you followed your husband to the Craig apartment house on the day he was killed.
I waited outside the entrance for over an hour. Then when I saw you go in, I left.
You know what Lois looks like.
I've seen her with my husband in one of their hideaways. And I've seen her with her mother.
And the day Roberts was killed, you didn't recognize anyone who went in or out of that house except your husband and me.
That's right.
Come on, then. Let's get started. I've got a little date in town with a female wasp. Hello, Mrs. Craig. Is your daughter here?
She's inside. Oh, I'm so glad you came. I was afraid I wouldn't be able to hold her much longer.
Hold her? For what?
The police. I called them 20 minutes ago. I guess it's no use, Mr. Runyon. I'm convinced now. Lois killed John Roberts. And as miserable as I feel about it, she'll have to pay the penalty.
Oh, yes. You feel miserable about it, all right.
Lois!
You've got to see me in a spot like this, aren't you? You hated me ever since you met my father.
Ever since you what?
Lois is my stepdaughter, Mr. Runyon. I married her father 2 years ago. He died a few months later. Lois believes I resented her, but that isn't true.
Oh, no. You're just crazy about me, aren't you, Mother?
That's why you pulled a gun on me when I came back home. That's why you called the police.
I'm sorry about that gun, dear, but it was the only way I could bring you to your senses and protect myself.
Would you mind turning that gun over to me, Mrs. Craig?
Oh, not at all. Here you are.
Thanks.
The police, Mr. Runyon.
I'll answer it. Well, Brad. Hello, Max. You're just in time for the party.
Is this Lois?
Yes.
Well, nice work, Brad.
Not so fast, Mac. You've got the wrong gal.
What?
You don't want Lois. You want a stepmother, Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Runyon, what kind of a joke is this?
A real unfunny one. You killed John Roberts and tried to pin it on your stepdaughter.
Are you out of your mind?
You neither came out of your house nor went in from the time John Roberts arrived. His wife was watching the entrance. You were inside that apartment all along.
Oh, that's absurd.
If you want a motive, Mac, check up on her department store account. When a woman her age starts buying solid gold cigarette cases for another woman's husband, it must be love. At least your kind of love, Mrs. Craig.
You...
Okay, just stand right where you are, Mrs. Craig, and relax. Robert threw her over for Lois, and when somebody like Mrs. Craig is given the go-by, anything's liable to happen.
Yeah, anything at all.
Judging by the job you did in your stepdaughter, you missed your vacation. You ought to go in for picture framing.
Well, I'm afraid she won't have much time for that, Brad. We're going to keep her pretty busy for a while.
Get out of my way!
Hey, you come back here.
Leave out a window!
Don't you come near me! Don't come near me or I'll jump!
Come on down off that ledge.
Mackenzie, wait. She's not going to jump.
You keep away from me, Runyon!
We're 11 floors above the ground, and the sidewalk's hard. You know what you look like after you hit, don't you?
Oh.
It won't be very pretty, Mrs. Craig.
Hey, easy, Brad, easy.
There's nothing to worry about. Is there, Mrs. Craig?
Why, you...
You're through and you know it. Now come off that window ledge, or I'll come after you and yank you down. Well... Which is it going to be?
Don't touch me. I'll come down.
Hello?
Mr. Runyon?
Who's this?
Lois. I wanted to thank you.
For what?
Refusing to press charges against Willis when the police picked him up.
I still don't know why I did it. I must be getting senile.
You did it because he knew he was only trying to protect me, and he knew nothing about the murder.
Stop reminding me of it. I might change my mind.
I'd also like to apologize for what happened in my apartment. I didn't want Willis to hit you, but I was too scared to stop him. Is there any way I can make up for it?
I'll speak to the lump on my head and find out.
Sergeant McKenzie said you were coming over to the apartment today.
I want to get hold of your mother's correspondence. It may be needed at the trial.
Do you think you could take an hour or two off to have dinner with me?
I doubt it.
I'm not a bad cook when I set my mind to it. We'll have oysters, big ones, and a 2-inch steak.
No, thanks.
Creamy mashed potatoes with a special sauce. Delicious artichokes. They're in season right now.
With mayonnaise?
Mm-hmm. And we'll top it off with crepe Suzette and a bottle of champagne. How about it? Just so we can part good friends.
What time do we eat?
At 7. And just to make quite sure you get here, I'll send Willis over with the car.
Don't bother, honey. Just to make sure I get there, I'll walk. Seems I spend my life in getting into trouble and getting out of it. But at the same time, I generally manage to get some other people in and out of trouble, too. Be seeing you again. So long.
The Fat Man by Dashiell Hammett, which premiered January 1946, an Australian version from 1955, and now Maisie and Southern, the 9th episode of the series from this day in history, January 19th, 1950.
Hiya, babe. Say, how about... Ouch!
Does that answer your question, buddy?
The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern. You all remember Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's famous Maisie picture. Now, in just a moment, you'll hear Maisie in Radio, starring the same glamorous star you all went to see and loved on the screen, Ann Southern. But first, your announcer.
Facebook.com/Max Golden Age. Have to squeeze the announcements in during the incidental music because we're running over as it is. Facebook.com/Max Golden Age, the fan page for this program, The Golden Age of Radio on WBAI and the Saturday edition on yesterdayusa.com. You should like it. You should love it. Follow it. Find out what we're doing on our various programs before they happen. Facebook.com/Max Golden Age. And now back to Maisie.
And now here's Ann Southern as Maisie.
Yep, I'm Maisie, like the man said. Maisie Revere. I was born in Brooklyn in 1900 and... Well, I was born in Brooklyn. You know, there's an old saying that clothes make the man. I got a little story that proves that clothes also make the woman, if you know what I mean. It all started back in London, England. I'd gone over there with a musical review called Humpty Dumpty. Well, if you think Humpty Dumpty fell off a wall, you should have seen our flop. So there I was, stranded in London, and broke as usual. Luckily, I managed to get a job as a model at one of them hoity-toity dress saloons. Salons that catered strictly to women born with silver spoons in their mouths. Well, one day, a couple of us mannequins were modeling gowns for one of them stuffy title dames.
And this, Ladies Five, is a creation of which Turnbull and Company is especially proud. I should like to call your ladyship's attention to the plunging neckline.
I shouldn't think it would be necessary to call anyone's attention to the neckline, Mr. Turnbull. Plunging, indeed. Looks to me as if it were torpedoed. Remove it from my sight at once.
Oh, but your ladyship, this is an exact replica of what has been worn in America.
Mr. Turnbull, what is considered quite the thing in the colonies does not interest me in the least. Remember, I am an Englishwoman, not an Indian. And if you have nothing more suitable to show me, I'll
We do, your ladyship. We've just scads and scads and scads of the very latest, the very, very, very latest. Next piece. Come on now.
While the next model paraded in front of her royal hastiness, I peeked through the curtains to get a closer look.
This gown, your ladyship, we consider poetry. Sheer poetry.
I consider it waste, sheer waste. Kindly remove it from my sight.
Yes, your ladyship, at once.
Nothing seemed to please this warmed-over Yorkshire pudding. Her reaction to each gown model was the same. One nostril went up like she was trying to smell something, and the other one looked like she had just smelled it. Too bad, too, because she was young and beautiful.
Next, please. Miss Rivera. Her ladyship is waiting.
Oh, coming, Mr. Turnbull, coming.
Ah, your ladyship. Here we have the very ultimate in gowns pour la danse. Chic, revealing, and, exercises a certain restraint.
I should like to examine it a bit closer. Come here, girl.
Oh, sure, Lady Smith.
If you don't mind, girl... My name is not Smith. It is Lady Smythe.
Oh, sorry, forgive me. I mean, forgive me, Lady Smythe.
Miss Rivera, if you don't mind, I believe her ladyship would like to see the back.
Oh, righto.
There you are, Lady Smythe. Ah, I see you are impressed.
Nauseated is more descriptive of my reaction, Mr. Turnbull.
Nauseated.
That gown leaves hardly anything to the imagination.
But your ladyship, after all, an evening gown is your...
Is like a picket fence. It's supposed to protect the property and not obstruct the view.
Yes. Very well put, Miss Rivera. Very well indeed. Sure. Don't you think so, your ladyship?
If you really want to know the vulgarity of this person herself...
A little fur chapeau also comes with it.
Yes, your ladyship. And it's just your type, too. Skunk.
Well, I've never been so insulted in all my life.
Well, maybe you should be, dearie, so you'll know how it feels to take it instead of just dishing it out.
Miss Rivera, her ladyship is a customer here.
I demand that this uncouth person be discharged at once.
You do not have to demand, kiddo. I know I'm getting the gate, and I needed this job, too. But I also need my self-respect, too.
Self-respect, indeed. And what would you Americans know about respect?
Well, that cuts it. Now sit back and listen, Smitty.
Mr. Turnbull, are you going to stand by and hear me insulted?
Well, frankly, I hadn't planned on it, your ladyship. But now that you've mentioned it, I do believe I'd rather enjoy it. Carry on, Miss Rivera.
Aye, chum.
Mr. Turnbull, I will never purchase another thing in this shop.
You never have, your ladyship.
Well, I've never been talked to in this way in my life. In our circle.
That's just the trouble with your circle. Ever since you were born, you've been traveling in one.
What?
You never gave anything. Just took what you thought was coming to you. In other words, you and your kind are just...
Parasites?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Turnbull.
Well, keep at it, Miss Rivera. You're doing quite well. Or, as you say in America, you're cooking with petrol.
Lady Smythe, I've been around quite a bit. I've seen a lot of this world. And when you really get down to it, the only difference between rich people and poor people is that rich people are only poor people with money.
Are you quite finished, Miss Rivera?
Quite. Thank you. Good day.
Oh.
Well, I guess I might as well get off my soapbox, Mr. Turnbull. I'm sorry I ruined a sale for you.
Not at all, Miss Rivera. I enjoyed the ruining immensely.
Well, I didn't mean to lay it on so thick, but...
Oh, but if I may be permitted to make a comment, some of those things that you implied were quite true. But why you were haranguing Lady Smythe, Miss Rivera, I had an idea which I would like very much to discuss with you later.
Later? Why not now?
Oh, come, come. We can't possibly discuss it now. It's 5 o'clock. It's time for tea.
Oh, yes. One mustn't miss tea, must one?
Would this table do, Monsieur Turnbull?
Ideal, Henri, ideal. Don't you think so, Miss Rivera?
Well, frankly, I'd feel less conspicuous in a corner someplace, Mr. Turnbull. Everybody seems to be staring at us right here in the center of the joint. I mean, restaurant.
Well, that's exactly why I asked Henri to seat us here. You are constructed to attract the eye. N'est-ce pas, Henri?
Ah, very certainement, monsieur.
Oh, gracias, monsieur.
Well, now that we're seated, Miss Rivera, shall we order? First?
Mr. Turnbull, I think I should set you straight before we go any further.
Set me straight? I don't believe I understand, my dear.
Well,
Pardon, would Monsieur and Mademoiselle care to order now?
Well, Mademoiselle ain't finished yet. Mr. Turnbull, about these clothes I'm wearing.
Beautiful, Miss Rivera, positively beautiful. The very finest ever created by Turnbull and Company. And on you, my dear, they are positively stunning. N'est-ce pas, Henri?
Tout à fait ravissant, mademoiselle.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Turnbull, I agreed to wear this outfit from your shop because you insisted on it. And, well, I'm grateful for a chance to wear nice things. I'm very grateful.
Oh, come, 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 my dear. You really owe me nothing.
Good. Now that that's cleared up, let's eat.
I believe we shall order now, Henri. Would you care for a spot of tea, Miss Rivera?
Oh, no. If it's all the same to you, I think I'd prefer a drip of coffee.
Very well. One drip coffee.
I'll just have tea.
Oui, monsieur.
Gee, Mr. Turnbull. An outfit like this is one of the weaknesses of the weaker sex. I wish I could always wear clothes like this.
You can, Miss Rivera. That is what I want to talk to you about.
Well, so long, Mr. Turnbull.
Oh, no, please, Miss Rivera, don't be foolish.
This may be a surprise to you, Sonny, but there are certain items that are not included in Lend-Lease.
Miss Rivera, look at me. Do I seem like the kind of man that your insinuation suggests?
No, but just because the tea kettle don't whistle don't mean that there ain't something cooking inside.
Oh, Miss Rivera, you are a very attractive woman. You wear clothes divinely. My clothes.
Uh-huh.
Now, when you entered this restaurant, you caused quite the effect that I had anticipated. The ladies here, they thought you were something other than a professional mannequin.
Well, the ladies weren't the only ones who thought that.
And the first thing that came into all those women's minds was, where did she get those clothes?
That was the second thing that came into their minds.
Miss Rivera, how would you like to wear clothes like that always? Go to the most exclusive hotels and resorts and have more than enough money not to have to worry about tomorrow.
No strings?
No strings.
What's the gimmick? What do I have to do to win this British quiz program?
Well, Miss Rivera, since the war, barely enough customers have patronized my salon to pay the overhead.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, the rich came to my salon from all over England.
Well, you can't expect that anymore, Mr. Turnbull. Now, the gasoline, petrol is rationed. Even the rich can't afford to travel to Turnbull and Company.
Exactly. But there is no reason why Turnbull and Company can't travel to the rich.
Oh, you mean sort of a traveling salesman?
No, a traveling saleswoman, Miss Rivera. In other words, you.
Me? I never sold clothes in my life.
You wouldn't have to sell. You just travel around at my expense to where the rich congregate.
Oh, and all I have to do is casually mention where each garment I'm wearing is from and the price.
Exactly. And when the ladies notice how the eyes of their attentive swains and husbands wander from their drab selves to your...
Go on, Mr. Turnbull. I think I see what you mean.
Well, Vanity will find a way to get to my shop in London and to purchase replicas of the clothes that you have literally been modeling.
Oh, and for this I'll have all the things I ever wanted to wear.
Yes. However, there's a... one slight catch.
Well, this is where I came in.
I mean, Miss Rivera, frankly, many of the best families in England, they don't quite understand Americans.
No.
You're an actress, I know. I saw you. I saw the show you were in.
Oh, so you were the one.
And, well, if you would sort of act as if you were British.
Oh. Well, what do you think of this? Oh, how did you old flute, old bean, old whatnot? Just received word from home that Pater and Mater were run down and killed by a tram. Well, who's for tennis?
Good. Very good. Well, Miss Revere, what do you say? You accept?
Well...
Here's your tea, Monsieur Turnbull. And your coffee, mademoiselle.
So sorry to inconvenience you, old chap. But I should prefer tea.
Tea? Is mademoiselle changing her order?
No, just my nationality.
The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern, will continue in just a moment.
This seems like a good time to say thank you for listening and to tune in next week for another golden age of radio. Oh, let's get back to Maisie. And good night.
Clark. Hey, Clark.
Oh, yes, Lord Deveridge. I was just in the process of sorting the morning post. There's the usual letter for you, your lordship.
From Lady Smythe, I presume.
Yes, sir.
Tear it up.
Destroy it, sir? Oh, but it's scented. Oh, the most exotic perfume.
Very well, Clark. You may smell it a few more times and then tear it up.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
My only purpose in coming to this dull resort was to escape the obvious marital net that untiring woman seems determined to draw me into. However, I really didn't come here to burden you with L'Affaire Smythe. Would you be kind enough to telephone the groom at the stables and ask him to saddle up that grey stallion, Firefly, like a good fellow? Hmm?
Firefly, your lordship? Isn't he a bit, spirited?
Quite. Certainly your social star can conjure up some activities more blood-tingling than whist or pin the tail on the donkey.
Oh, but your lordship, Kensington Lodge has always been a vacation resort for, people of more advanced years.
Perhaps. But if some of your aged guests don't do something besides just sitting around under trees, they're liable to take root. Oh, I'd give £10 right now if I could feast my eyes on an exciting, beautiful woman again.
Porter! Do be careful with my luggage.
Say,
my entire wardrobe, consisting of 34 complete ensembles from Turnbull and Company, 326 Drury Lane, London, alterations made free, is in there.
Clark, I owe you £10.
Oh, she does seem quite attractive, your lordship.
Quite. The American GIs had an expression that aptly described that particular type of attractiveness. I believe the phrase was, words to that effect.
Come, chaps. Kindly deposit my luggage at the desk and scamper out of my limousine and help my chauffeur and footman. I mean, feetman. I have two, you know. Do help them, will you?
Yes, at once, madam. Oh, thank you, madam.
Oh, not at all, my good chap. Surely you've been given £5 tips before.
£5 tip, your lordship? She must be very wealthy, or American.
Hard to tell what she is. With that accent?
Yes, set down my hat box here, boy. And be careful. It's just full of my new chateau. I mean chateau.
Pardon me, your lordship. Yes, madam. What may we do for you?
Good afternoon, clerk. My good friend, Mr. Turnbull of Turnbull and Company, creators of the very utterly art and feminine apparel, established in 1925, wired ahead, I do believe, for accommodations. Don't you know?
But of course, your grace.
Oh, no. No, I'm Maisie, silly. Maisie Revere.
I mean, yes, Lady Revere.
If he failed to send the wire, I should be livid, but absolutely livid. Lady Revere?
Oh, I do hope there's been no mistake. But here's Mr. Turnbull's wire. Kindly book a suite for a Lady Maisie Revere.
Oh, gee. The telegraph company left out a comma. It was supposed to say, book a suite for a lady, comma, Maisie Revere.
I believe you dropped your glove, Lady Revere.
Oh, thank you. Well, Thank you very much.
You were saying, Lady Revere, something about a comma, I believe.
Oh, yes, yes. I was saying that should I like it here, I should be very glad to come again. Don't you know?
Oh, I see.
I'm quite certain that you'll enjoy your stay here, Lady Revere. Would you think it too presumptuous of me if I were to ask you to join me for tea?
Well, aren't you the pushy one? I am not in the habit of partaking of tea with strangers, my good fellow.
Oh. Well, I'm Lord Anthony Devorish, Lady Revere.
Oh, well, now that we've been introduced, I suppose it's all right.
Well, that's very charming of you. Shall we say out on the terrace, about 4:30-ish?
Oh, well, I'm practically parched, Lord Devorish. Could we perchance make that 3:30-ish?
Delighted, my dear girl, delighted. I merely suggested a later hour to give you ample time to shower or tub.
Oh, well, I'm much too parched to shower or tub. I believe this time I shall just basin.
Yes, basin. You have a delightful sense of humor, Lady Revere. I'm frightfully glad we met. Frightfully.
Oh, frightfully, don't you know?
I just checked with the housekeeper, and I believe your suite is all ready for occupancy. I shall have your luggage brought up immediately.
Oh, thank you, my good man. Here, this is for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you indeed.
I was just going upstairs to my suite to change. Lady Revere, perhaps we can ride up together in the same lift.
Oh, well, don't you think it might be safer in the elevator?
Elevator? Mm. But, oh, isn't that the term used in America for lift?
Oh, yes. Now that you mention it. I'm afraid I've been going to too many of those cinemas made out there in the colonies. You know, where a girl meets a man one minute and...
Yes, and then the next minute he invites her to dine.
Yes. Things just don't happen that way in real life. Why, sometimes he doesn't even know what she really is.
How true. And then scarcely 2 minutes after they've met, the boy and the girl always subconsciously find themselves calling each other by their first names.
Yes. So untrue to real life, what?
Quite untrue.
Yes. Well, I'll meet you at 3:30 for tea, Tony.
And I'll be waiting impatiently, Maisie.
Well, from the first moment Tony and me sipped our tea together, I knew I was a real gone gal. I forgot that I was just a clothes horse for Turnbull Company, because in the week that followed, Tony treated me like a thoroughbred. Maybe it was the tender way he lifted me onto my horse every time we went riding, and the gentle way he arranged the cushions on my chair after I came back. Maybe it was because for the first time in my life I was treated like a lady, not like just a dame. Oh, I tried to tell him the truth about me several times, but somehow the subject always got changed, or maybe I didn't try hard enough. Anyway, I remember one afternoon out in the terrace, I was having tea with Tony again. He didn't know it, but I was leaving the hotel that night. I'd wired Mr. Turnbull I was coming home and calling the whole arrangement off. Now, while I was sitting there at the table with Tony, I tried to think out the words to tell him that I was an all-American phony and hoped that maybe he would understand.
Tea, Maisie?
Hmm?
Oh, you've been miles away. Don't you think it's time to come down to earth?
Yes, down to earth. Tony.
Yes, my dear?
Tony, I...
Yes?
I think I'll have a cup of tea.
Oh, yes, certainly, my dear. You know, you seem a bit pale this evening. This tea will brace you up, make you feel like another person.
Well, that's exactly my trouble, Tony. Since I've met you, I actually do feel like another person.
Oh, Maisie, my darling, I was hoping that you thought that way. Because, well, since I've met you...
Oh, please, Tony. Before you say anything, I'd like to ask you something.
Yes, my dear. Anything your heart desires. Anything.
Tony.
Yes, my dear.
Would you...
Yes?
Would you pass the lemon?
Oh, certainly, my dear. Here. Then crump it?
No, just squeeze it.
Maisie, darling, are you sure that you're all right?
Yes, Tony. I've got to tell you something that's been on my mind since that day.
Then I have to tell you something too, Maisie. I've changed my mind about those boy and girl films that they make in Hollywood. Maisie,
please, Tony. Me first.
Oh, yes, naturally, my dear. Ladies first, huh?
Well, that's the trouble, Tony. I'm not a...
Hello, Tony. I do hope I'm not intruding.
Pamela, where did you come from?
In London, my dear chap.
Just thought I'd drop by and claim my letters that you obviously haven't read.
Maisie, darling, what's happened? What in the world are you doing with that napkin over your face?
The spoon. It stuck me in the eye when I drank my cup of tea.
Oh, my poor darling. Look, perhaps I can help. Let me see.
Yes, my dear. I should like to see Tony's darling, too. Perhaps that will explain why you haven't replied to my letters. Oh, take your friend away someplace and talk to me, and don't bother about me. The spoon isn't stuck in there very deep, you know.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, my darling. I wouldn't want any infection to set in. There, now, let Tony remove the napkin, huh? There's a big girl. There.
Well, I do hope it's nothing trivial. You!
Hello.
Pamela, have you and Lady Revere met?
Lady Revere? Tony, this girl is an imposter.
Pamela, I know you're just a jealous cat, but I will not have you talk in that manner to my fiancé.
Fiancé? Tony, are you insane?
No, kiddo, I'm the cookie that's insane.
What? Maisie, your accent. Is this some sort of a game?
Obviously, darling. A game of blind man's bluff. You are obviously the blind man.
Yeah, and you just called my bluff. Shall I do the honors, Lady Smythe? Or would you like to tell Lord Deveridge the sad story of Maisie Revere, girl Schmo?
Schmo?
That, I believe, is a medican for stinker. Well, that's pretty close, honey. But if you don't mind, I'll take it from here.
Very well, my dear. Tony, if you want me, and after this shop girl finishes her sordid tale, I imagine you will, I'll be at the airport. I'm flying back to London this afternoon. Goodbye.
Goodbye, darling. Have a pleasant trip. And be careful that you don't fall off your broom.
Maisie, I just can't understand any of this.
No, when you're born with everything, I guess it ain't easy. What I've been trying to tell you all along, Lord Deveridge, is that I'm just a sort of traveling clothes horse for Turnbull and Company.
Oh, so that's the reason for the continual 326 Drury Lane, London alterations made while you're waiting.
Yeah. It was strictly business till I met you. And then, well, I guess the moon got in my eyes.
Maisie, you remember those American films we've been talking about?
Yeah. Boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy finds girl. Well, you found me. Believe me, brother, right now I'd like to get lost.
Well, I don't want you to get lost, Maisie. There are other films, too, remember? Rich man meets shop girl. Rich man falls for shop girl.
Shop girl goes back to shop.
But rich man follows her, and they live happily ever after.
Yeah. Oh. Honey, you'd never sell that to an American producer. It's too commercial.
Are you, Maisie? It wasn't only money in my case.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Well, it wasn't only your rather extensive wardrobe nor your physical beauty with me either.
Oh, I know what you're trying to say, Tony, and thanks. But it won't work.
Why not?
Well, you're caviar and me, I'm pickle.
Well, pickles and caviar go rather well together when they're eaten.
Yeah, but after a while it can make you awful sick.
I wouldn't mind. You were my nurse.
No, Tony. We're from different worlds, and I just don't fit into yours. You're a lord, remember, and I'm not a lady.
No, you're wrong, Maisie. You may not have that so-called blue blood in your veins, but you certainly are a lady.
Just a moment, we shall return to the adventures of Maisie. Once again, here's Maisie.
Well, that's the story of Cinderella and her Prince Charming. Maybe some of you are saying that I should have married Tony and see what happened. That marriage is a wonderful institution. Well, maybe marriage is a wonderful institution. But Tony and me, we just didn't talk the same language. There's one thing I did learn, though. It's always better to tell the truth than lies. At least when you tell the truth, you don't have to remember what you said. Well, get along there, feet. London is miles away.
You have just heard The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern.